Welcome to Obesity, a Disease, the official Obesity Medicine Association podcast exploring the many facets of the disease of obesity. In this episode, obesity medicine specialist and OMA clinical education director, Dr. Nicholas Pennings, interviews Dr. Donna Ryan, a highlighted speaker from Obesity Medicine 2021 virtual conference, about alternatives to weight-promoting medications. Obesity, a Disease podcast is brought to you by the Obesity Medicine Association, the clinical leader in obesity medicine.
Primum non nocere, above all, do no harm, is a foundational principle in medicine. One of the challenges in medicine is that even with the best of intentions and following standards of care, medical interventions can produce harmful effects. For many years as a family physician in private practice, I unknowingly prescribed medications that cause significant weight gain. Before being trained as an obesity medicine specialist, I often did not consider the potential weight impact of medications in my decision-making process when selecting a therapeutic agent. Learning about medications that cause weight gain was an eye-opening experience for me. I see this as an essential part of obesity training for all providers, especially primary care providers. Hi, I'm Dr. Nick Pennings, Chair of Family Medicine at the Campbell University School of Osteopathic Medicine and Executive Director of Clinical Education at the Obesity Medicine Association. And today I have the pleasure of speaking with Donna Ryan, MD, Professor Emeritus at Pennington Biomedical Research Center in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. She served as Associate Executive Director at Pennington Biomedical and is currently Associate Editor-in-Chief of the journal Obesity. She's made masterful contributions to medical research, including involvement in numerous landmark studies. Dr. Ryan presented at the OMA 2021 Spring Conference Virtual. Her talk was titled, Do No Harm, Alternatives to Weight-Promoting Medications. Thank you for being with us today, Dr. Ryan.
It's my privilege and pleasure.
So you have been a pioneer and leader in obesity medicine research and education throughout your career. What got you interested in obesity medicine?
You know, Nick, I'm actually a medical oncologist.
Really?
You know, a long time ago, over 30 years ago, I was asked by LSU to help start the Pennington Center, and I met George Bray. So George is really the father of obesity research. He's also an exceptional person who became my mentor and taught me everything I know about obesity. George is a clinician scientist. He did work in the laboratory. He also was the PI on all of those grants where I got my start, on the DASH diet grants, on the diabetes prevention program, on the look ahead study. So George, the reason I got into obesity was because of George Bray, and I am all the luckier for it.
That's a fantastic story. Very interesting. You know, we often set out on a path in life and with much conviction and then get steered in another direction. And you clearly got steered in a totally different direction.
You know, I think that there are some similarities between medical oncology when I was doing it and obesity medicine. So, you know, back in the day, 30 years ago, cancer was a stigmatized disease. When I was trained in medical oncology, there were surgeons who would not refer their patients to medical oncologists. That it was stigmatized. It was the feelings about cancer patients were that that treatment was futile. And I think there's the similarities to obesity are that, especially at the start of obesity medicine, it's also a stigmatized condition. And I think that that physician attitudes about it are of futility, but that's changing.
Right. That's an important change that has to happen. And so at the conference, you presented on weight-promoting medications. There's quite an extensive list of medications that cause weight gain. What do you think are some of the most commonly prescribed medications that are associated with weight gain that providers may be unaware of their weight-gaining potential?
First and foremost, antidepressants. You know, I think about 15% of the U.S. population is on antidepressants. It's really amazing how often they're prescribed, and almost all of them are associated with weight gain. Now, individual susceptibility to that weight gain varies, but they're probably if you look at the case by case basis, it would be the antidepressants.
Yeah, that is a big one. When looking at the chronic pain patients too, see mm-hmm. things like gabapentin and pregabalin being prescribed, and steroids that are commonly prescribed. And it's interesting, when I talk to patients, they often don't know that those things are causing weight gain.
Yeah, and even for our diabetes treatments, many of the diabetes medications, insulin and the sulfonylureas and the insulin secretagogues promote weight gain. Even the older beta blockers are associated with some weight gain. Mm-hmm. So we need to be aware of this.
Yeah, yeah. When you discuss medications that promote weight gain, you make an important point about individual variability. Medications that cause weight gain do not do so in all individuals. What are your thoughts on why some medications are more likely to promote weight gain in some individuals than others, and how should healthcare providers factor that into their medical decision-making process?
Yeah, it's really true. I think we need to look at all of our patients as being unique. You know, one of the concepts that we teach in obesity medicine, as you well know, Nick, is that we need to personalize our approaches to the patient. Certainly, obesity is a very heterogeneous disease, and we do not know what causes obesity in every single patient. There are probably many different phenotypes. And so I think the susceptibility to weight gain with medication is certainly variable. We need to listen to our patients. When our patients are experiencing weight gain, we need to be suspicious about the medications that they're taking, especially if they are known to produce weight gain in susceptible people. And if possible, we need to prescribe something else to treat depression or diabetes or whatever our medication is that we're prescribing. And if possible, a medication that's either more weight neutral or one that might actually be associated with some weight loss.
And one of the other things that I, you know, often like to have people think about is, does somebody need to stay on a medication? We see patients go on to antidepressants and never come off. And so the traumatic events that might have precipitated their depression have long passed, but the medication is still there.
I'm so glad you said that. It's a great point.
Yes. And I think that individual variability is so important. I talk to my students about an N of one, that the patient in front of us is an N of one, right? That's not part of a large trial.
Well, you know, our reports on medication-induced weight gain, they usually report the average weight gain or the mean weight gain. I don't know about you, Nick, but I don't have any average patients.
Right, right. Each one is exceptional. So diabetes now affects over 10% of the population, and weight gain plays an important role in the development and management of type 2 diabetes. As a family physician, my past focus was on glycemic control, with little recognition for weight gain effects of medications for treating diabetes. As an obesity medicine specialist, and with the advent of newer medications for diabetes that promote weight loss, I look at it differently. Do you see a future where weight and metabolic effects of diabetes treatment play a bigger role relative to glycemic control?
Absolutely. You know, we know from the diabetes prevention program that for people who have prediabetes, if we can get 10% weight loss, we can achieve normal glycemia in those patients. That's great. And we know for patients who have established type 2 diabetes, provided they still have some beta cell function, provided they're early in that course of their diagnosis of type 2 diabetes, if we can achieve 15% weight loss, we know from the direct study that we can achieve normal glycemia. So I think the direction that we're taking with type 2 diabetes is to prevent it whenever possible and reverse it whenever possible. We need to look at diabetes like a stream, and we're catching patients somewhere along the course of that stream. And whenever possible, we need to use a weight-centric treatment approach to move those patients upstream in the course of the disease. You know, Nick, prediabetes isn't pre-anything. That's where microvascular disease gets established. And that's where cardiovascular disease gets established. We need to be very alert and try to move our patients to normal glycemia, not be satisfied with pre-diabetes as a diagnosis.
Yes, I never really liked that term because you're right. The disease process, the consequences of the disease are starting then. And that's, you know, why the criteria for screening for neuropathy or nephropathy or retinopathy begin at time of diagnosis in type 2 versus 5 years later at type 1, because the process is occurring as that patient is progressing towards type 2 diabetes.
I really like how you alluded to the fact that, you know, we were all taught to focus on glycemia. And then we were all taught to focus on the ABCs, cardiovascular disease prevention. And now I think more than ever in our diabetes standards of care, there's more and more emphasis on weight. And I think finally, we're beginning to address the root cause of type 2 diabetes. The root cause of type 2 diabetes is obesity. It's actually diabesity. You know, we need to address the root cause. And if we have tools to help us with weight management, we can do that job.
And one of the mantras I think we should have is treat obesity first, right?
Yeah.
If we treat obesity, you treat the diabetes, you treat the hypertension, you treat the dyslipidemias, you treat the obstructive sleep apnea.
Amen.
So I have a patient that has a history of class 3 obesity and major depression. He struggled with his weight. He was doing well on lurasidone and losing about 10% of his body weight with meal replacement program. But then he had a breakthrough bout of depression with suicidal ideation, and he required inpatient care. He was changed for lurasidone to olanzapine. His depression improved considerably, but he was no longer suicidal. However, he quickly regained the weight he lost. What are some of the strategies that providers can use to mitigate the weight effects of patients who need to be on a medication that is known to cause weight gain?
You know, I talked about this in my talk for the OMA, Nick. And one of the strategies that we can use is when we are prescribing a medication that we know has a very high risk of weight gain in a susceptible individual like your patient who has proven he's susceptible to obesity by his history, we can treat that patient concomitantly with medications in addition to the olanzapine. So there are actually studies that have been done using additional metformin, additions of GLP-1 receptor analogs like liraglutide and other GLP-1 receptor analogs that can blunt the amount of weight gain, can prevent the amount of weight gain. You know, in my talk, I showed what's called a heat chart. And the heat chart classified medications by color. And red meant you were at the greatest risk for weight gain and dysglycemia and development of metabolic issues. And olanzapine was one of the worst, the highest on the heat chart. And so it's definitely one of the medications that we need to think about preempting that weight gain. It's much better to prevent the weight gain by adding a medication to it, like metformin, like liraglutide, to prevent that weight gain than it is to try to treat it after it's occurred.
And you know, I remember when those medications came out, and olanzapine and risperidone were great add-on tools for resistant depression and for bipolar disorder, and really were breakthrough. But I saw the weight gain associated with that, mm-hmm. And you know, it's really, you know, on the one hand, you're treating somebody's depression, and then you're causing weight gain, which is going to cause a depression over a different issue and other mental health consequences.
Yeah, you know, your patient, they can be life-saving, as in your patient. I mean, suicidality is a threat to your life, and we need to react. So I think we don't want to be afraid to prescribe medications that can help patients, but we know how to prescribe them in patients who are at risk for weight gain by adding other medications to them.
Yes, and as a follow-up to the patient, he was already on metformin, and then I added a GLP-1 agonist, and that has worked to counter the effects of olanzapine and has reduced his weight gain and actually reversed his weight gain and helped him to lose weight as well. So I think that is important that we have to treat the patient first, and we have to make sure that, as you said, you know, we have to treat the depression and we have to do whatever means necessary to protect the life of the patient, but then look for workarounds.
He was fortunate to have a knowledgeable physician, and I want to thank you for your efforts to educate other primary care physicians about this important issue.
Yes, I think it is something that, as I said, it was eye-opening for me to get an insight into how my prescription habits were impacting patients' weights and then other conditions. So what are some great resources that you would recommend for providers to use to learn more about medications that cause weight gain and their alternatives?
Yeah, I have two recommendations. One was the Endocrine Society systematic evidence review of medications that promote weight gain and medications that also produce weight loss. This is a 2015 paper. So it came out at a time when many physicians were not aware of this issue. And so it's a great basic paper. It's free. You go onto the Endocrine Society website and can download it for free. And it's been updated. There's an even better source. And that better source is the Obesity Medicine Association Obesity Algorithm. And they have an excellent chapter on medications which promote weight gain. That one is not free, but it is a great value. It's $50, and it is worth every penny.
Well, thanks. I think that is a great resource, and a great resource for the alternatives, because it does lay it out as to what causes weight gain, but what you can use as an alternative agent. But I think the most important thing is to be aware of it, right? To be mindful of it in your choices, and to really be thinking about some of the unintended consequences of our prescription choices. All right. Well, I'd like to thank you for being with us today, Donna. You provide a lot of great insight on medications that cause weight gain. And I think that mantra of do no harm is such an important one. It's been fundamental in medicine. You can find Dr. Ryan's presentation, Do No Harm, Alternatives to Weight Promoting Medications, on the Obesity Medicine Academy at obesitymedicine.org. All right. Thank you for being with us today. I look forward to hearing you at a future Obesity Medicine Association conferences.
Nick, this was so much fun. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Drs. Pennings and Ryan. For more information about obesity medicine podcasts and other resources from the clinical leaders in obesity medicine, please visit www.obesitymedicine.org/podcasts. Loved the episode of Obesity, a Disease? Head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. The views expressed in this podcast episode are those of the show hosts and do not necessarily represent the opinions, beliefs, or policies of the Obesity Medicine Association or its members. Please check back in soon for another episode of Obesity, a Disease.